Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast. In this sunny August holiday season, we're pleased to welcome the Chief Executive Officer and Director of Advanced Energy, Leslie Peterkin, who's very kindly giving us his time today on the podcast. Leslie, welcome. How are you?
Thanks, Mark, for the introduction. And yeah, nice to be back with you again. We've had a couple of good conversations previously. So yeah, I'm very interested to do this news, which sounds like an interesting format forum.
Indeed. Yes, it is. It's a very relaxed forum. And I mean, I suppose we could get away with saying, you know, beers are allowed at this time, 4 o'clock. I know that Kenny probably has a beer in hand because he is actually on holiday up in Scotland and he wasn't long out the hot tub, I believe. Kenny, how are you?
Yeah, all good. Welcome to the podcast, Leslie. Yeah, I was indeed in the hot tub, Mark. I actually contemplated sitting in a hot tub doing it, but I just thought, no, the kids splashing about would probably, it wouldn't go well. So I've retired into the house for the time being. But it's fantastic to have you on the podcast, Leslie, and it's always a pleasure to speak to a fellow Scot.
Indeed.
As much as you said, you're an international traveller. You never lose that twang, and especially when you're speaking to somebody else Scottish, you soon slip into the...
I have had that a few times when I've been back to Scotland, find who is that speaking? whose accent comes out suddenly and I'm going, it's bizarre. Mm. Anyway, on to other things. What would you like to talk about, Mark?
Yes, okay, well, on the podcast, Leslie, yeah, what we like to do is really, we believe that the businesses are about the people behind the business and people really buy into the people. So what we like to do to sort of start off is really just go back in your lifetime. You can take us back as far as you want, you know, where you were born, maybe you went to school or university, what interests you, what led you into your early career, and then really just going through your career history and your sort of motivations and what skills you've picked up, people you've met, places you've been, that kind of thing, just to really get a nice feel for who you are before we then move on to talk about where you are now, of course, at Advanced. So I'm happy to just sort of hand over to you and say, you know, take us back as far as you like, and we'll ask some questions along the way.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't quite going to go as far back as school, I have to say. But let me say that I was born in the north of Scotland in Thurso, so it's as far north as you can get without being on a smaller island, and I've graduated from there, you know, to the south of Scotland where I went to university in St Andrews, and then ultimately, you know, going international with oil and gas. And in fact, yeah, I did a physics degree at university, and then I followed that up with a PhD, and then I entered the oil and gas industry, and I think I got some interest in the concept of getting into oil and gas from the North Sea oil boom at that time. It was the late 70s, early 80s, and by the time I finished university, it was there, still the late 70s. And I put an application out to various different companies, and Shell offered me a job, and it seemed just the job. In fact, in sense of an international career, going to lots of different countries, different experiences, and a bit Scottish, I might say, in terms of the fact that many people have done something similar. And having been in the international domain for a long time, you do meet a lot of Scots people in proportion to the number of Scots that are actually in Scotland. So there you go. So, I did start with Shell. I started with Shell in the UK after doing some training. And I spent 10 years with Shell, which was a great experience, I have to say. First in the UK, in the North Sea, in the early days of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then I got transferred to Gabon, which was an interesting, you know, change of scenery, not just in terms of, you know, climate, but in the northern North Sea at that time, you know, we were producing 1 million barrels a day. A Shell, a single well in the Brent field would do 25,000 barrels a day. I arrived in Gabon and we were doing, for the whole company, 25,000 barrels a day. And I thought, well, goodness me, what are we doing here? But then I, you know, started to learn what it is about doing some tougher stuff on onshore and even more challenging things with small rates offshore. So it was a great experience down there. We made a big discovery at the time I was there called Rabi Kunga, which is now a declining field at the end of its life. But it was a very exciting thing to do. It was in the middle of the jungle. And we tested the wells and eventually went on development. After that, I left Gabon and was transferred to Malaysia. And I spent 3 years in Sarawak. And again, a whole new experience, Asian experience, different reservoirs, different style of development. All of it was offshore. Again, but much smaller rates and more complicated reservoirs. So, you know, very, very useful experience. All as a petroleum engineer, I ended up in Shell as a senior reservoir engineer. And after 10 years, I thought it was time to move on and to do something different. I was interested in getting out of the big company environment and doing something with independent oil companies. So I spent 10 years then with independent oil companies, went back to London, worked for a number of companies at that time, and got into business development. I think that's the key thing that was the change in my career. Instead of being operational, I was looking much more at business development in the various companies I worked with in London, and was responsible for a number of transactions, which were quite successful. And after that, moved back to Southeast Asia to work for Carigali, Petronas Carigali, and helped them with their first overseas development offshore in Vietnam, which was the Ruby field. And I had a number of conversations with Premier when I was in London, and eventually they contacted me when I was in Malaysia and asked me to come to Singapore. Mm-hmm. So I went to Singapore to do business development in Southeast Asia as general manager, sort of grand title, but really I was just running around doing all of the business development connections for about a year. And in the course of that period of time, when I first arrived in Singapore, Robin Allen, who's I think quite a well-known party in the UK from his time in Premier, he was my boss, and they were looking at Premier was a non-operated party in a field called Yetagin in Burma, which they had discovered. It was a gas discovery, and they had farmed out to Texaco, and Texaco were selling out. And I looked at the asset when I first arrived and suggested that we, on the basis of my analysis of the situation, that we preempt as Premier and to take over operatorship with a view of drilling a couple of appraisal wells that weren't planned as the development was about to take place in parallel, and with the possibility of doubling the value of the asset. Eventually, we did do that. They agreed to do that, and the board agreed to do it. And we preempted. I went up there and ran the project from the start of development, plus the appraisal wells that I mentioned. And we did indeed increase the reserves by 80% and doubled the value of the asset in 15 months. So it has to be one of the highlights of my career, that one, I have to say. It was always something I wanted to do after I left Shell, to identify an opportunity and then run with it. And there I got my chance. And that was 2000, the famous 2000, the oil price crash, $10 oil. Everybody thinking it's the end of the oil business. And we decided to not come back to London, as Premier had offered to do at the end of the project, but to go to Australia and set up House and Home in Perth. And I decided at that time as well, as that there were many redundancies, as you may recall, if you remember that period of time, series of redundancies in the oil business in the late 80s and through the 90s. So I decided to become an independent and sort of control my own life. So for the next 20 years, essentially, I was consulting either an interim management, either in Australia or here back in Europe, and I'll touch on that in a minute. I guess the two big projects or two big contracts that I had a number of contracts with smaller companies, but the two more important ones perhaps were with Santos and Woodside. I got asked to come and help with Santos for about 6 months because they had a succession plan issue, and the 6 months became 2.5 years, and we did some very good stuff there, and not least I got involved in a field called Bayundan in East Timor. well, it's now East Timor. It used to be called GPDA, but we can touch on that in a minute. And so that was a really interesting experience and a very nice contract, I have to say. Then I got picked up by Woodside to run the Browse LNG project for 2 years. And they again had a succession issue, and they wanted somebody to come in on an interim basis. And the CEO at the time, Don Volte, said, "I don't want you for 1 year, I want you for two." And I thought, well, that's very nice. I'll have that. Thank you. So I did that for 2 years, and we drilled 7 appraisal wells over a period of those 2 years, and we certified 14 TCF in the Browse fields. There are 3 fields involved, which is very remote in Northwest Australia. So it was a great experience. Again, big field, big project, big team. So then we decided to come back to Europe and did the same thing here, but had to build a business again from scratch. So I worked for ADAX here in Geneva, where we live, and a number of other companies. Probably before I gave that up and did advance, the last major one was as the SVP for MOL, for development and production, based in Budapest. And there I got, I was managing their entire E&P portfolio, but from operations development point of view. But I got in touch back with the UK. I got in touch with Kurdistan, which I had been involved with 2 other operators as an interim manager. So just again, broadened my experience. I got involved in Kazakhstan with Central Asia, and we have an asset that we're interested in Kazakhstan, in fact, as a consequence of that. And all through that time where I was independent, I was always looking to try to do a yet again for myself. And I had a number of ideas and opportunities, but could never really get to grips with getting the funding. We did manage to get something off in Thailand, which is the Bua Luang field, which used to be called the Porn Suri field, but is well known, I think, in London. It's been very successful. That was a 13-year-old fallow field that a colleague and myself looked at again, and with just some basic interpretation, saw that there was an opportunity there. And what we thought was then 20 million barrels, that maybe 30 million barrels became 80 million barrels subsequently. So this talks very much to what Advance is all about, which is why I'm mentioning, perhaps the Yetikon field. And then if I mention the Bua Luang field, it's the sort of thing we like to do. Take things that others don't see necessarily the full value of, and maybe we have a little bit of a niche idea. So I'd been looking at such assets, and again with this colleague, and we had a little portfolio of opportunities, but we couldn't find funding for these, and we were struggling to find a way forward. And then I met Mark Rowlands, and he was busy at the time, but eventually I persuaded him, to look at the portfolio seriously. He was persuaded by the group of assets that we had pulled together, myself and this colleague. And eventually he agreed to work together with us to try to find funding. And that led to us getting introduced to a party that was interested in backing out of the Andalus energy company that was listed on AIM. And we took that over last February. And since then we've done the Buffalo transaction, which is a redevelopment of a field that wasn't fully developed previously. And we're going to drill an appraisal well in October to prove up 2P volume, which we hope will be somewhere around 34 million barrels. And given the quality of the reservoir, we're pretty confident that we're going to have a very good outcome.
Okay. So you've had a very broad career, traveling all over the world, but a mixture of onshore and offshore, or is it mostly onshore?
I would say it was a good mixture of onshore and offshore, perhaps a little bit more weighted to offshore. But I don't see that as one way or the other. It's always nice to be onshore because you don't have this abandonment issue that you have with offshore, which makes me very nervous about deep water, for instance, and getting involved in such a thing. But our strategy, as we've talked about before, an Advance, which is something I put together and presented to Mark as the way we would like to work, which he accepted, and we've run that from the start. is that we want to look at existing resources, so something that's been discovered already. It may have been developed already, but maybe not fully developed. Or it may have been developed before, like Buffalo, and has been abandoned for whatever reason. There's a redevelopment opportunity. We want to try. We want to be non-operated. We don't want to have built a big team and have to, you know, manage a large workforce in lots of different locations. We want to be non-operated so that we can use our skills and an experience, and we have some quite considerable experience just in terms of years, but I think we've demonstrated that with our track record as well, some of which is on the website. We want to be in a position to influence our partners who will be operators. So in the case of Buffalo, it's Carnarvon. And I know some of the people there from my time at Perth, which helps as well. And so that provides us the opportunity to be able to, as I call it, parachute into any location or jurisdiction that we're comfortable with, and where we perhaps have some connection with maybe the operator or the asset involved. And we can do that almost at any point in time. So if we wanted to go to Kazakhstan, for instance, if there was an operator there that was competent and an asset that we were interested in, we can go there, you know, as soon as we feel that we can, you know, cut a deal, basically. Mm. Whereas if you're going to be an operator, you have to set up a whole, you know, team on the ground, and then it has to be connected with your corporate team and so on and so forth. So we have a very small team, but we can do a lot of things. And that keeps our G&A low, which means that we can most effectively use our funds for our shareholders' benefit.
Definitely, definitely. There was three things, Leslie, that attracted me to Advance, and you just touched on one of them there, and that was obviously you guys are not going to be the operator of these fields. Mm-hmm. The two other things that really caught my eye was the substantial skin in the game that you guys I've put in. I mean, from memory, when I think last year alone, it must have been about £500,000 the board of directors put in.
When we took over the company, putting too fine a point in it, it was essentially broke. It had a little bit of money, but there were bills outstanding, so essentially it was, you know, zero cash. So we put £500,000 in. Yeah, three founding founders put £500,000 in. And then when we did the RTO for Buffalo, both myself and Mark put in another, in terms of pounds, I can't remember what it would be, but it'll be about 400,000, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always good to see, because I mean, a lot of these companies, you know, the directors might have 4 or 5% of the company, but not all of them have put that cash in. You know, these shares might have been awarded for various stuff. You know, milestones or whatever, whether it's right or wrong, but you guys are physically, you know, put the money in. So that was a huge plus for me. Yeah. And there was always a statement on your website and on your Twitter account, and it acts in your presentation as well, that you, by 2025, you guys wanted to go from zero production to circa 20,000 barrels a day, which is quite a statement. So it is. Do you still understand?
To me, that actually was a bit of undersell, to be honest. I'd like to see us do better than that. But again, you have to be careful about what you promise and what you can deliver. But if you take Buffalo, for instance, if we get the 34 million 2P and we put it on production, and it was on production before, as I'm sure you're aware, it came on production. There were only two producing wells initially. And they achieved a peak production of 40,000 barrels a day from those two wells. So there's the potential for us to have a similar outcome, but better management, like reservoir management, I should say, on the way the wells are completed, which will allow us to achieve a similar rate for a period of time on the Buffalo field. It won't go for that like that for 5 years or 6 years. That's not the way oil fields go. But the productivity and the quality of the oil, you know, means that we can get very high rates from this field. And it's not beyond the possibility that for the first year we'll have an average rate in the region of net of 20,000 barrels a day. And then that throws off a huge cash flow for the company.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, this production shut, I think, in 2004, and I think it was like sort of 4,000 barrels of oil a day. That purely down to economics at the time, or can you expand on that?
Well, it's difficult to know. It's a long time ago, and there are people in Perth who still live there who worked on it, but actually sort of finding out the whys and the wherefores is not so easy. But my understanding was is that the FPSO contract was coming up for renewal. There had been Nexon was the operator at that time and had drilled a couple of wells which didn't go terribly well. And so my assumption is that senior management was not minded to get themselves in a situation they were going to put more money into this thing. So I think they felt that as the FPSO contract was coming to an end, it was better just to, you know, call it a day and be done with it. There was always known at that time that there was a crest that had never been penetrated, which meant that there was definitely more oil to be produced from the field, but it would have meant drilling another well, and they'd already had two wells, this is Nexon now, they already had two wells that weren't very, that were indifferent, shall I say. They both came on production, and they were both produced, and they both produced more than a million barrels, but from the management's point of view, they weren't the same as the two wells that came on in production already, the ones that did 20,000 barrels each. So my understanding is that they simply said, well, enough is enough, and they decided to let the FPSO. And then they had to abandon the field as a consequence. But it was always known, you know, that there was an undrilled attic, which is, of course, what we're chasing now with the well that we're going to drill in October.
And one of the things that I sort of picked up on what you were saying earlier, Leslie, was about this you mentioned it, I think, when you were in Singapore with Premier Oil, where you were,
yes,
you wanted to find an opportunity and run with it, and you drilled the appraisal well and you doubled the value within 15 months. And you've also mentioned this idea of like having a niche idea, or maybe approaching something a little bit different. So what does it take, do you think, to make that big discovery or to find something that someone else hasn't seen that you're confident that you see the opportunity here with Advance?
Well, Advance is a vehicle to do these things. So the idea is that we brought some opportunities into Advance, and one of them was Buffett. If you look at the what would be a good one to. It's an interesting conundrum, this, to some degree, because it's not straightforward. Although if it was straightforward, other people would do it. And it's a combination of experience and original technical knowledge and experience as well. So, for instance, when I was working for Shell, I worked for Shell offshore as a well site PE, which you're supposed to do as a petroleum engineer. And it's a great experience because you get hands-on, you know, experience of how the operation runs from both a development, from a drilling and from a production point of view. And that was a great experience. Every petroleum engineer does that in Shell for 18 months. So you hold that experience. And then I went into being a reservoir engineer for the remainder of my time with Shell and left as a senior reservoir engineer. So I had some experience as a reservoir engineer. So then you look at the fundamentals when you go and see an asset, when you get presented with an asset or an opportunity. The Bualuang one, for instance, the click there that changed this 13-year-old discovery that nobody had come up with an idea of how to develop or want to develop, for that matter, was the well test. The well test that was done by Sun on the discovery well. And the way it was done, without going into the technical detail, it meant that the results, if you took the information as it was presented and understood what it meant and the consequences of that, it meant that the reservoir was a very, 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 very permeable reservoir. Now, a lot of people had looked at this before, but nobody up to that point had connected all the dots, and that the well that was tested on the discovery, which did only 750 barrels a day, actually was capable of doing 10,000 barrels a day. That was the point where you go, we have something here that people have overlooked. And the field came on production at 10,000 barrels a day originally, when it came on production. And subsequently, it's never really gone much above that. It's been up to about 15,000 barrels a day, I think. But the gross production now is up to 75,000 barrels a day, 80. So from the well. So each well is doing something like 10,000 or something barrels a day, but there's only a small amount of oil. And one of the reasons that there's only a small amount of oil now is that they're stripping the oil out. And this oil was a rather sticky oil, so it required a lot of flushing of water to bring it to a washing machine kind of effect.
Mm.
And if you understood all of these bits, connected all the dots, and didn't worry about the water, then you suddenly you have a development. And of course, it paid for itself. The payout on the field when we put it on production was something like 6 months.
So
for 13 years, it had sat there and nobody could come up with an idea what to do.
Oh, so the plan then is, Leslie, take some of this magic dust and apply it to Buffalo.
I try not to get too into the magic dust.
It's just
the basics. It's just connecting the basics, frankly.
I suppose technology has advanced so much in the last 20 years, since the well is shut down as well, that there's a lot more you can do with your dollar than you could with that dollar in 2004.
Possibly as well. Yes, I think there's merit in that that thought process. But the other thing that comes up to people ask me or it comes up in conversation frequently is how come there's still opportunities out there? Because there's a lot of assets, and there's a lot of opportunities still out there because not everybody just does all the connects all the dots. I don't want to try and pump us up and say that we're smarter than the rest of the people. We just maybe connect the dots with a different frame approach and a different frame of mind, perhaps.
Mm.
But ultimately, it usually comes down to technical. It can also be a commercial click that makes something work that others haven't maybe seen. But typically, there's a fundamental technical thing. I mean, there's one, for example, that we've looked at. We haven't managed to do anything with it yet, but we're still looking at it. And it's a gas field, which is sour gas in it, which is complicated, but can be managed. But the people who were involved in the asset have managed it for some time. They've been looking at it and what to do and so on and so forth. And I came along at a certain stage, again, as one of these roles as an interim manager. And always when I get into a company as an interim manager, first thing I do is look at the portfolio and see if there's any opportunities. And it's very rare. I don't think there's one company I haven't got that I've gone to that I haven't found something that they've overlooked in some shape or form. Which often causes a bit of problem because people don't like telling you they're being told that they missed an opportunity, but it is what it is. But anyway, on this particular asset, I was asking for data and I was asking for information and trying to understand it. And then it came up, there was a particular parameter in this gas field, the gas condensate ratio. And it was termed to me in a unit that I'm not familiar with. So I said, could you translate that into, barrels per million standard cubic feet, which is the classic way of doing it for ourselves. And after a little bit of calculation and muttering and so on and so forth, they came up with a number of 200. 200 is just off scale, completely off scale. And immediately I knew there was an opportunity here that I needed to dig into further. That's exactly the same thing as the well test, but here was just a piece of information that nobody had thought was particularly interesting or relevant, but for me was so off scale that there has to be an opportunity.
Mm. I mean, they do say, because I think mine and Kenny's background is more in sort of mining exploration than oil and gas, but they do say that it takes a number of exploration companies to actually find a deposit, understand it properly and make it so they can actually get something out of the ground. It just takes that kind of different set of eyes, doesn't it, a different approach, just to interpreting things a little bit differently. And it's interesting what you said there about, is there still more stuff to find? Because looking at Buffalo, which of course was operated by BHP, you'd sort of think, well, surely if there was still more there, BHP would still be there.
They sold it to Nexen, interestingly enough, after 2 years.
Mm.
So the management obviously decided it was, not of interest. And it was declining, and Nexon thought they could come in and do something with it. They tried and didn't work, okay. But they provided, you know, additional information for us 20 years later to go back.
Yeah, okay. So what's going on now then? What are you up to at Buffalo to
Buffalo? Well, we're currently finalizing the drilling contract, okay. with the drilling company that we're going to use as a jackup. And we're administration now. I mean, the terms of the contract, the commercial terms have been agreed. The LOI announcement we made some weeks ago stands, as it were. Mm-hmm. And so the contract will be finalized on that basis. But as always with the administration, it just takes time to get to the end point. So we had hoped by now to be able to announce the contract being signed, but there's no doubt that it will be signed with this contractor. It's just a question of when the lawyers and the commercial teams finally dot all the I's and cross all the T's. So at the moment, I think unhappily, it probably won't be until about the middle of the month.
Okay.
But it's almost can't be later than that because we're expected to receive the rig in the second half of October. So time is coming. It's close. Spud date is close.
The good thing about this program as well, Leslie, is that you guys are fully funded to meet your side of the commitments.
No, absolutely. And it was the deal. The deal was we'd farm in for 50% and we would cover the cost of the well. And we would also go out and source the funds for the development. And if you see the economics, which are on our website, I mean, this asset as a development asset will certainly support that deal.
Excellent. Mark, I think it's maybe time to put Leslie on the spot with the 60-second challenge. Do you think we should have pre-warned him, but I think sometimes it's better if we just do it on the fly.
Yeah, we could just do it on the fly. What we often do, Leslie, is just towards the end of the podcast, we get ask the guests to have a 60-second elevator sort of pitch as to why investors might consider, in this instance, investing in advance or taking a good look at advance as an investment opportunity. So we could put you on the spot.
Sounds like you are putting me on the spot.
Well, you can tell me to go away.
Well, I'm happy to be put on the spot.
Okay. Well, I'll count you down then. In 3, 2, 1, take it away.
Take it away. Look, we've done the Buffalo deal. It was predicated on the ability to drill an appraisal well to prove up a volume of oil that had been left behind by previous operators. I'm very confident that we will deliver a development from this field. This is very much in line, or is totally, in fact, in line with our strategy. Existing assets, overlooked opportunity, and we have others like these in mind. And I hinted at one when we were talking about the CGR a few minutes ago. That is one that we're looking at. We are looking at others. And we always have this idea to try to come up with an approach that hasn't been considered before by others for something that already is existing in terms of either development, that is to say it's already producing, or something that has yet to be produced but is already understood to some degree, having been explored or even appraised already.
Okay, good. That's 1:10. That's all right. We'll give you that. It's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Not bad for on the spot.
not bad for on the spot, indeed. So just to find it, well, I have one last question. I don't know if Kenny has any more, but one last thing from me. So you've got this appraisal well being drilled. Do you find out quite quickly then, or what's the kind of situation when you get the drill turning? Do you get it?
Look, basically, the tease is getting down there in terms of the number of days that it takes, so many days to get down there. Mm. Once we get down there and we drill through the reservoir, obviously we'll know already as we're drilling through the reservoir, what we're coming up with in terms of where the oil is, where the water is, and then we'll log the well. It's probably going to be a fairly basic logging suite, nothing hugely complicated. So the well is expected to be spudded in the second half of October, according to the agreements that we've put in place with the rig contractor. We expect this to be a 30-odd day well. So by the end of November, we would like to think we are ready in the position where we're about to or are running the logs. As soon as we get the logs, we'll basically know where we stand. Of course, there will be the need to integrate the data into the existing database and get a detailed, shall we say, understanding, and that will take a few weeks. But the initial understanding of how much oil column we have and what the implications are of that with respect to the 34 million barrels that we expect to move from 2C to 2P should be relatively well understood once we finish the logging.
Okay.
So by the beginning of December, we should be able to give information on how successful the well has been.
Okay, good. Okay, well, excellent. an interesting rest of the year. Kenny?
Yeah, no, I'm all good. I'm just I'm looking forward to that because obviously, you know, I've got a few shares in advance. So yeah, and it's doing rather well today. I think it was up 7-8%. So yeah,
I'll take we came on, I had a look. It was at 9% up.
Even better. Yeah, and the markets have just shut. So yeah, good stuff. But no, it's been great to have you on, Leslie. And hopefully the next time we speak, my internet connection will be a bit better. I was kind of dropping in and out, but I think I got away with it. So
it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
Anyway, look, thanks very much, and Mark. So always a pleasure to talk with you. And I hope it's interesting for the investors.
No, I'm sure it will be. And yes, thank you very much, Leslie.
Yep,
Leslie. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.